This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Thursday, March 21st. I'm Julia Caulfield. In today's headlines, Carrie Andrew says goodbye. Trails and pheromones and parks, oh my! Seoul is waterproof tells waters story. And a mountain weather forecast. But first, the award-winning KOTO News Department provides the region's only local news and public affairs programming in both English and Spanish. Show your support for your community radio news by going to koto.org to donate. And thank you! The Lone Cone Library is one piece of Carrie Andrew's legacy.
We've seen it kind of like grow and change, and now we're looking at May 6th, we'll have been open in the new facility for 5 years.
Andrew moved to the Telluride region over 2 decades ago with her husband, who was a snowboard instructor. She worked at the Wilkinson Public Library, the Norwood Schools, the Telluride Regional Medical Center, before becoming the executive director of the Lone Cone Library in 2010. Nearly 14 years later, she's saying goodbye.
My work in Norwood has been a labor of love. And there have been so many people that have blessed me along the way who I have had the privilege of working with. And I have grown so much in the last 13 years at the library. The many different opportunities and ways in which I could be involved. I mean, I didn't know anything about economic development. I didn't know anything about public management, tax levies, any of those sort of things before coming to the library, and I leave so much richer than I started the job. And I just can't thank the community enough for letting me learn and for blessing me in many ways over the years.
When Andrew started her job, the library was in an old building with minimal space.
I get emotional about this because it's something I've been extremely passionate about. And when I first started, the library was small, and we only had the capacity to offer programs really by using our outdoor space or by partnering. We were able to partner with the firehouse, which was a lot quieter at that time, and the livery, and using their space so that we could expand programming, and then also doing outreach to the daycares. We started doing that, or daycare. And trying to be creative at using spaces, but we could only sustain that for so long, and which is one of the reasons we started looking at building a new facility, because in order to serve the public in the way the public wanted and needed to be served, we really couldn't do it in 2,000 square feet with no office space and one stall bathroom. It just kind of got a little cramped.
Under her leadership, the library passed a bond measure, built a new facility, and expanded programming.
We try to have this how to find a way to yes mentality, so that when someone comes and says, I'd like to do a program, I'd like to do this, and we're like, well, let's see how we can partner on that to make that happen. And so we've done a lot of different things, mainly because people came to us. Like, we don't necessarily always have that skill set on our team, but we're happy to provide space or provide staffing to help organize or advertise or, crowd control while we have an expert that delivers the content. It's fun to see what the community wants to do and to know we have the space to help them be successful in their dream project.
That mentality is part of what Andrew says she loves about community libraries.
What I love, especially in a small library, you have a lot more flexibility and the ability to change and meet the needs so you can flex quickly to the needs of the community. And what I love is that a library can help in almost any situation by providing resources or space or just connecting someone with another resource in the community. So I really feel like, and if you read our mission statement, it's longer than this, but it focuses around connecting people to resources, people to opportunity, and people to people. And that's our goal, is to create connections in our community and decrease isolation, but with a focus on meaningful connections.
As Andrew steps away from the community she's built in Norwood and into the next chapter, She acknowledges she's not exactly sure what that is.
I don't know what's next. My kids are going into 9th grade and 6th grade next year. So if we are looking at moving, this is probably the best time. We know that we want to be somewhere warmer. So when we moved to Colorado, I lived in Texas and Nigeria. And I told my husband, I've never had to wear this many clothes. 1 year. Well, 21 years later, I'm finally done. I'm ready to be warm. And so we're not sure where we're moving, but it's somewhere south of here-ish, you know, at least somewhere warmer.
The Lone Cone Library will be hosting a celebration of the library's building and a goodbye party for Carrie Andrew on May 10th. The job of San Miguel County's Open Space Commission is to protect, conserve, and enhance land for open space, recreation, natural habitat, and agriculture in the community. This week, Open Space Commission members and staff came before the San Miguel Board of County Commissioners to give an update on projects they have in the works for this year. County Parks and Open Space Director Janet Kask highlights 9 major projects for open space in 2024, everything from work on the East End Master Plan to the San Juan Skyway Scenic and Historic Byway Committee. There's also enhancements to the Bridal Veil Trail.
This is one of the most popular trails in the region. All kidding aside, Mountain Club has trail counters out there. We have trail counters out there. And we do log about 70 to 80,000 hikers a season.
Jeez.
And granted, you know, even if you take into consideration that those are the same people out and back, or maybe little dog legs set off the counter, you're still probably talking at least 30 or 40,000 people.
Kask says they want to connect the trail from the lower portion, which ends at Bridal Veil Falls, to the upper portion.
We have a plan in place to erect steel stairs, which are going to go over the boulder that exists at the base of the falls. And we have engineered plans in place to not only erect the stairs, but to also have a deck at the top.
Mm.
So there will be an overlook platform with which you can see the falls.
There will also be interpretive signs. The county hopes to have the project done later this year. Greg Polio, operations manager at the county, says they're also working to put up 700 pheromone packs to protect Douglas fir from beetle. They plan to work with community groups to help put the packs in place.
Usually it's an early spring type thing. It is time sensitive because the beetles fly at a certain time. Once they've flown and landed, then it's too late. The packs don't work.
The county is continuing work on the possibility for a Down Valley connector trail. Here's Kask.
But it's the 3.4-mile trail that would start at the county's Down Valley Park, proceed up on 145, and terminate at the county's M59 River Trail in the Sawpit community. The feasibility study has taken about a year because we had environmentalists out there. We had cultural resource groups out there just highlighting historic structures, any species that existed out there with birds.
The county has divided the trail into 5 sections and is having community meetings with the residents who live in each section. While Kask notes a number of projects, a large portion of the update focused on the 1-acre Mill Creek Park along the spur.
It's going to be more of a passive use park. Yeah, this, as you know, is opposite the Shell gas station on the corner of Mill Creek Road and the spur. And it is a small site. It's sort of just going to be plantings, drought-resistant plantings, some trails, benches, a little barbecue area with a little covered area, and a little bike skills track for kids.
The county put a pause on moving forward with the park last year with the hope of being able to purchase another lot of land near the Mill Creek lot to build affordable housing, given changes that may come with the updated East End Master Plan. County Commissioner Ann Brown doesn't understand why the project was unpaused.
I remain concerned about investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in this passive use park when that whole parcel may eventually be reworked, given the change in the future land use opportunities.
But San Miguel County Attorney Amy Markwell notes the planned use development on the land dictates different.
That Mill Creek parcel was done under a PUD, and at the time of the PUD approval, that land that is the quote Mill Creek Park was provided to the county specifically as the requirement for public lands. And so that is why that is designated in the PUD as a park and why the county has been proceeding as a park.
County Manager Mike Bordogna adds the current iteration of the park wouldn't prevent other use in the future.
Nothing that's put on this site would permanently prohibit it. Should the applicant wish to use it differently in the future, the shade coverings, the benches, things like that, nothing would diminish the value of the property for a different use down the road.
Following a slightly contentious discussion, the Board of County Commissioners gave the go-ahead for staff to gather a bid for the development of the park. County Commissioners will discuss the park further once bids are in. Matthew Mosley started swimming when he was a kid in Louisiana. He was on swim team in high school. But it wasn't until adulthood that he took a real dip into big water.
We went on a river trip down the Colorado River. It was a canoe trip.
It was Mosley's first trip with his now wife, Kristen, who he met while living in Telluride.
We went on this trip and we didn't bring like anything really. We didn't have enough ice or beer or shade or chairs or anything. But I did bring my swimming cap and my goggles and Speedo. And it was the first time that I swam really, truly open water. And it was just magnificent. And it's very transcendent. It's way different than swimming just in a box of chlorinated water.
That experience started a life of swimming in open water. Mosley has swum 40 miles of the Green River through canyon lands. He's crossed infant coral reefs in Costa Rica, swam in the Sea of Galilee and Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans.
In my swims, I partner with an environmental organization. It's about using my swimming to bring awareness to water issues.
Mosley is out with a new book, Soul is Waterproof, and he'll be in Telluride for an event on Friday, World Water Day.
Soul is Waterproof. It came from after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, and it was a scribbling that started appearing as kind of graffiti around the city. Soul is Waterproof, and it meant that no storm was going to wash the city away, and that the people were gritty, they were tough, and they were going to rebuild better and stronger than before. And at the bottom of this book, in the undercurrent, the foul wag, if you will, the deepest channel in the river, in the book, it's about durability and change and adaptability.
That struggle and challenge, Mosley says, makes you stronger. It also means we have to fight for what's important.
One of the big lessons I've learned really is about that people can't live where fish can't swim. And that if we don't have habitat for fish, then we do ourselves as a human race a disfavor too. And that we can't just have managed canals and big reservoirs of evaporating water. We need wild, free-flowing rivers to be human, to be alive. And so I think that's one of the most important things.
When Mosley swims, he says it's not so much for him, but the water itself.
That is something that drives me way further than I would ever go myself, because I feel like I have an accountability to the water and that, you know, I'm an ambassador for the water as in a swimmer. And so I have to sort of do these challenges and be able to tell its story, why water is so magical and so divine to others so that they may care about it as well.
Matthew Mosley will be in Telluride on Friday, March 22nd for an event with his new book, Soul is Waterproof. The event is a collaboration with the San Miguel Watershed Coalition and will take place at the Patagonia store starting at 4 p.m. Joe Schaefer is inspired by the wild landscapes of southwest Colorado. Schaefer's newest work, Infinite Horizons, Impressions of the Colorado Plateau, is currently showing at the Telluride Arts HQ Gallery. He brings unconventional techniques and mediums, like stains and dyes, to create rich and unique textures in his work. Telluride Arts is hosting an artist talk with Schaefer on Friday, March 22nd at the Telluride Arts HQ. The talk will start at 5 p.m. The event is free and open to the community. The Colorado Department of Transportation will be conducting roadwork on Highway 550 between Ridgeway and Montrose starting next week. Construction will take place along an 8-mile stretch of road from Ridgeway State Park to Kelowna. The project will include improvements to the highway, with road widening for the construction of a southbound passing lane. The project also includes a 3-mile stretch of wildlife safety improvements, including the installation of a large wildlife underpass at Billy Creek, wildlife fencing, and earthen escape ramps and deer guards. CDOT says the goal of the project is to reduce vehicle wildlife crashes. Work is scheduled to begin on Monday, March 25th, and run through the end of 2024. Work hours will run from sunrise to sunset, Monday through Friday. Traffic impacts will include lane closures and single-lane alternating traffic, with narrowed lanes and reduced shoulders. The speed limit will be reduced throughout the work zone, and drivers should expect up to 15-minute delays. Recent storms have boosted snow levels across the West, and there's more on the way. Right now, every part of Colorado is above average for late March snow totals. The same goes for Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona. That's a good sign for summer water supplies in the Colorado River. Snowpack in Colorado's mountains typically peak around the first week of April before starting to melt and flow into the streams and rivers. Recent storms have boosted snow levels across the Rocky Mountains, and there may be more on the way. Early forecasts for the next week shows 10 to 20 inches of new snow coming to Colorado's mountains. Democratic lawmakers are trying to increase state support for migrants who have recently arrived in Colorado from the U.S.-Mexico border. But KOTO's Lucas Brady Woods reports their efforts are limited by federal law.
A bill working its way through the state legislature would set aside $2.5 million for local organizations that help migrants start new lives here. The funds could be used to help clients find jobs and other services like housing, healthcare, schools, and legal assistance. D. Daniel Scriven runs the Colorado Office of New Americans. She testified this month in support of the bill and said helping migrants actually helps Colorado's economy in the long run.
Just with a little assistance up first, these new arrivals can be huge contributors to Colorado's community.
Although the federal government, not the state, grants employment authorization, Scriven said local organizations often help migrants through the application process. The bill was already approved by a legislative committee. It's now awaiting debate on the House floor. I'm Lucas Brady Woods at the State Capitol.
The recent snow that hit the Front Range brought snow plows out on both sides of the Continental Divide. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Patterson Rensberry took a ride with one to get a taste of what happens when a snowstorm hits the region.
Splashes of orange and blue flash across the snow in the dark of an early morning. Matt Welch is at the wheel of a large orange CDOT snowplow. The plow is a B-type, with a front plow which can weigh up to 40,000 pounds. With a recent severe winter storm pummeling Colorado's eastern foothills and parts of the I-70 corridor, Welch has been asked to work closer than usual to the Continental Divide.
You don't have a lot of guests in these, do you?
No. This will be the first third party or outside CDOT ride along I've done. So
cool. Well, I'm excited.
First for both of us.
As we begin the first loop of Welch's 12-hour shift, he mentions that there are some points of etiquette to keep in mind when driving around snow plows.
I would definitely say slow down. I mean, you have to drive for the conditions. You want to get to where you're headed, you know, and you're going to get there a lot quicker if you get there without spinning and doing the 180. So my advice is slow down. If you see the plows, the safest spot you can be is right behind them. So give them plenty of room to remove the snow on the roadway, sand it, de-ice it. So enjoy the escort.
Another plow passes by going eastbound, an A-type with a pull-behind plow. According to Welch, the use of such equipment is specialized to certain conditions and is ideal for clearing both interstate lanes simultaneously. Normally, Welch runs routes closer to DeBeck Canyon, and he says that Western Colorado's canyons come with unique challenges for his profession. Another tricky part of Welch's job is keeping up with bridges, which are generally inclined to ice long before the rest of the roadway.
The road surface, blacktop, holds an ambient temperature. So during the day, it absorbs the heat. And going into a storm or going into an evening, it kind of retains that heat, at least initially, and provides a little bit of a self-melting factor there. But in a canyon that doesn't get the sunlight during the day, it doesn't warm up. So a lot like a bridge deck that's got cold air underneath it, a canyon in cold corners or shaded areas freezes a lot quicker. So DeBeck Canyon, Glenwood Canyon, you might have wet road through most of it, but you get into a curve that hadn't gotten that shade is a lot more prone to being icy. So as you approach it, if your speed's too great or you didn't slow down for the conditions beforehand, you know, you might end up in trouble going around that curve. So we advise driving for the conditions, and then we also focus our efforts on those cold corners just because, like bridge joints, we know they're the first to ice up.
Matt Welch has spent over 10 years with CDOT in multiple parts of the state. He mentions that the hardest part can be missing holidays and time with family, but that overall it can be gratifying to make the roadways safer for everyone. A lot of planning goes on behind the scenes when a snowstorm hits the region, and as Welch explains, there is a method to the plowing.
Depending on the roadway, the category of road, so say like an interstate is going to be a Category 1, Category 2 road, so it's going to have more plows, 24-hour coverage. Usually a plow will run a 12-hour shift and you'll swap out with a different driver after 12. You'll have a day shift, night shift, and those plows will be running till the storms breaks, roads clear, and then clean up. So interstate, for example, you're going to have plows running nonstop until the end of the storm. Secondary roads, you're going to have fewer plows, but they will also be running throughout the storm. And then sometimes you have 14-hour roads, which are your less traveled state highways, that you'll only have coverage from 5 a.m. to 7 p.m. After that, plows won't be on.
In the end, this morning on the roads with some of the commuters saw only a mild amount of snow. Compared to Vail Pass and Colorado's foothills, our portion of the winter storm was positively tame. But Welch offers this advice for driving in winter:
knowing the roadway you're going to travel and just be prepared.
Regardless of the severity of winter conditions, it's fair to say that the safest place to be on an icy road is either in a snowplow or behind one. For KDNK News, I'm Haddison Rensberry. The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 20 degrees. Friday should be sunny during the day and mostly cloudy at night. The high is in the mid-40s with a low around 30. Saturday calls for a 30% chance of snow showers with a high near 45 degrees. Saturday night, there's a 90% chance of snow showers with wind gusts as high as 40 miles per hour and a low around 25. This has been the news for Thursday, March 21st. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206. We would like to thank everyone who has donated to CODO during our Winter Fund Drive. A huge thank you to Dabs Anderson, Mary Borsnick, Suzanne Chevins and John Wontrobsky, Peggy Collins, Bill Burgess, Robin and Jeff Hope, Ellen Eleven, Bill Hall, Marty Langan, Albert Royer, Will and Hillary Thompson, Delaney Young, Pam Specker, Rick Myers, Julia Milan Avila, Lois and Mel Tuckman, John Massey, Bill and Cheryl Jensen, Jarob and Katie Carter, Bruce French, Katie Geisler, Sierra Green, Ayla Kanow, Turner Kilgore, Jill McCord, Allison Tarwater, Brad and Jennifer Tate, Tony Wilcox, Catherine Warren, Lance and Laura Waring Colbert, James Sullivan, and Rosamund Strong. Thank you all so much.